the light. Other than usual spread of subjects this evening, with some interesting ones on the UFO side, covering healing, which is connected with contact with the ETs. But as normal, I will start off with the latest update by Sheldon Nigel on behalf of the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. It reads that we arrive, dear hearts, with more to say about what is happening in your reality. Relentlessly, our Earth allies are forging ahead, overcoming the articles thrown up by Earth's last dark cabal. Across the planet, drastic transformation is taking place and is everywhere in the air. Yet somehow, these changes seem to be elusive to you. But if you dig beneath the surface appearances, you would quickly discover evidence of just how close this divinely prescribed change is happening. All of this is under the aegis of the divine, and hence certain things must be met to guarantee all goes according to the plan. Two central requirements are the release of America from its present bondage and the disbursement of the abundance programs. The latter to be accomplished without noticeable hitches. Meticulous attention to the details of the plan is paramount and must be taken seriously. We fully understand your ongoing anxiety and want to inform you that these uncertain and seemingly interminable times are indeed to pass. Each day our fleet receives notices that confirm that your prosperity is truly close. A vast dark conspiracy is working hard and long to foil these programs, and yet all its Machiavellian stratagems are coming to naught. Our Earth allies are equipped with a series of their own strategies that they implement according to fluctuating requirements. The effectiveness of this game plan is creating a gnashing of teeth in the inner councils of the dark. We intend for the time being to keep up our backroom support of our Earth allies and to slide into a more dynamic role in the very near future. Our purpose remains first contact. First contact can only happen once the dark stranglehold over your world's mainstream media and associated governments is largely dismantled. To ascertain the degree of control we need to overcome, we recently carried out a few experiments. In the past months, we placed our craft for brief periods out in plain sight in various places around the planet, such as China, America, and Brazil. These tests confirmed our suspicion. A means to unravel the UFO cover-up is still essential. Our many diplomatic and liaison teams are moving our Earth allies closer to victory. We are still convinced their overthrow of the current American regime and its many global allies is a necessary first step to preparing you for first contact. To most of you, the prospect of actual contact with us is something somewhat shocking. A lot of education on our part is needed to clear up the foolish stereotypes deeply imprinted upon you. On the bright side, deep within you lie positive memories of your space family. These need to be brought to the fore. Before this can happen, the negative impressions left by your xenophobic religions and the confusion created by myopic sciences are to be publicly challenged by us. We intend to set the story straight regarding your true origins and the philosophies guiding us. Many of you will at first be skeptical, even doubtful about your motives. Nonetheless, we believe your common sense will sort out the wheat from the chaff and you see through the deluge of denunciations the dark's many champions are throwing at you. Moreover, the light has a truly divine trump card up its sleeve, the Earth's many and renowned ascended masters. The prime goal of this mission is first, your growth in consciousness, and second, your acceptance of the fact that you are one of many sentient human societies in this vast galaxy. Moreover, you are merely one of the many types of sentient being that inhabit a very well populated and most stunningly beautiful galaxy. As you begin your travels among the stars, you will soon realize how wondrous is the divine's physical creation. the swift expansion of your mind will demand a corresponding connection on all levels with your fellow galactic citizens. Rejoining your space family is a desire that lies deep in your soul and is a natural part of exploring this galaxy. While you move through your recent divine experiences in limited consciousness, Mother Earth's role was to protect and nourish you. Now the time arrives for you to reward her and to prepare for the next phase of your collective journey. Now you are to leave this earthly womb and link up with us, your space family, and this includes the reunion with the peoples of Inner Earth. Your reunion with Inner Earth is important to your next stage of development. As you shrug off the orthodoxy shaping you, you need an intermediary which can assist you to accept the new. This is where your fellows in Inner Earth come in. They can provide the open and loving space you need during the next step of your move into higher consciousness. The heart energy from Inner Earth permits a recognition, a memory from deep within you of the new truths and their implications. You can begin to explore the worlds of consciousness and learn how the divine functions in this realm, called physicality, to perceive the awe and beauty of creation, often requires a special mindset, and your next step will be to move rapidly towards things you presently can barely imagine. What is happening now is a means to get you there. First contact is above all a marvelous device used by the divine to supply the provisions for the next part of your journey. We realize that our presence here may confuse some of you. Some 13 millennia ago, you were abruptly plunged into a savage environment that propelled you to come up with a new frame of reference in order to survive. Thus was born your present bleak and fearful mentality that seems to suit the daily survival requirements for life here on Mother Earth. This dire survival mode has prevailed here since the fall of Atlantis. Since then, many scenarios were set in motion by heaven, and these became the great consciousness shift that you are now going through. One of these scenarios is our arrival here. However, the amount of expansion that this mission has undergone since its inception over a decade ago is astounding. This ongoing elaboration of our mission is due in part to our interaction with you and in part to our own discoveries. The universe can be unpredictable, and your first contact is a good case in point. As a people, you are important to your planet and to this galaxy, and our part is to watch over you and prepare for our divine intervention in your affairs. As noted earlier, this moment is not far off. Your global society is reaching a point of decision whether to continue as before or to break away onto a wholly new path. Our surveys of your inner thoughts and desires show us that you truly wish for a departure from what is tried and known. This also implies that you are getting ready for what we have to offer. Even so, the present circumstances contain a very small window of opportunity for you to execute this new path. Hence, our arrival is critical to your success. Knowing this, we stepped up all contingency plans and informed our fleet that our main job is to ensure that you succeed in what you truly wish to do. This means there are many alternative ways to use our technology to nudge your world into acceptance of first contact. We dearly wish to follow the path of least resistance, but if this is not possible, we are prepared to intervene in a much more dramatic fashion. We say this to let you know that we are determined to complete this mission as soon as possible. We have often had to make adjustments to carry out this operation in the simplest manner possible. This is how we got to this present game plan, and we continue to reserve the right to further modify or abandon the current scenario. Today we have reviewed what is playing out on your world. We intend that all is now ready to happen, can happen, and happen now. Yet we have also advised you that it continues to work in a flux. This is vital that you remain focused and ready to act on our behalf when this magic moment suddenly materializes before you. And so ends the message this week from Sheldon Nigel. again, I think, a very uplifting message. And it tells us now, more than any other time in the past, how near we are to these events taking place. There are lots of other predictions, and I think the general consensus is that we are on the edge of something really big, which is soon to happen. Now I'll move on to my general news items. Haven't got too many this time. Strange. Some weeks I have piles of them, but this week not very many, but that would allow me to spend a bit more time on the UFO articles I've got. In the UK press, an article by Ryan Parry, who, funnily enough, is a US correspondent, spoke about President Bush suffering another blow when his plan to send 21,500 extra troops to Iraq was bluntly rejected by senators. Now, I'll interject there and say that I haven't seen that report come up from any source that I deal with in America, but I guess that may well be circulating. Strange, that one. We sometimes get bits of news over here, I think, that don't appear perhaps immediately in your media in the US. The report goes on to say the bid was dismissed as one senator accused Bush of playing a ping-pong game with American lives. And the Democrat-controlled Senate Foreign Relations Committee voted 12-9 against, saying it was not in the US interest and urging early transfer of security to Iraqis. It says this decision is non-binding, but politicians hope it will force the unpopular president to reconsider. The article goes on to mention something in relation to Mr. Bush's State of the Union address, and it is noted that he pleaded with opposition Democrats to give his plan to quash violence a chance to work. Republican Chuck Hagel, a long-standing critic of the war, said, "There is no strategy. This is a ping-pong game with American lives. We better be damn sure we know what we're doing before we put 22,000 more Americans into that grinder." So there we are. There's a little news item that's come up in the UK. I saw a video in the week, which I thought was worth mentioning, because I'll give you the link, and you too could see it if you wish. But there was a very interesting interview when Peter Boyles interviewed Aaron Russo, or Russo. He made a documentary film, and he was talking quite a bit about the Federal Reserve, which he said is illegal because it's a private bank, and he's calling for it to be closed down. And he mentions that the 16th Amendment does not give the government authority to tax the people, and his whole message is one of saying that the American people should protect their freedom and not allow the governments to take it away. And indeed, that is the very function of the government, or should be the function, is to protect your freedom. Now, his website is freedomtofascism.com. The video interview is about an hour long, but it's extremely interesting and well worth listening to. He's an excellent speaker, and he's certainly not afraid to say what he thinks. Now, anyone who listens regularly will know that I get the Michael Russ Worldwide newsletter, and on the 22nd of Jan, I noticed there was mention of protesters who will urge Congress to stand up to Bush. This came out from the website truthout.org, and it reads that Americans angered by Bush's plans to escalate the Iraq war will flood the streets of Washington on Saturday, January the 27th, which is, of course, tomorrow, in a massive national peace march organized by United for Peace and Justice, and marchers will call on Congress to listen to the voters, not Bush, by using its power to end Bush's war and bring the troops home. Now, they reckon that the last three national marches organised by United for Peace and Justice attracted between 300,000 and 500,000 people. Well, that sounds pretty good to me. So let's hope that demonstration march is even bigger this time, because in my own messages that I've had so far this week, there is an emphasis on the people becoming more powerful and really having the ability to take it back for themselves. Another email that crossed my path was related to Truth Out Again. It was a press release that they quoted from the United for Peace and Justice, which of course is the one I've just read. But I think in this particular email I've got, there is a lot more information. Now, among those slated to speak at the pre-match rally the speakers which will be speaking at the pre-match rally are Salt Lake City Mayor Rocky Anderson, who apparently last year led an anti-war march of thousands, which was the largest protest in Salt Lake City history. You have the Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr., Congressman Dennis Kucinich, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Bob Watada, who is the father of Lieutenant Watada, the first military officer who refused deployment to Iraq, and apparently is currently facing court-martial, and also active duty service people. So it would seem that a lot of people are putting themselves behind this call for the end of the war, and I'm suitably impressed to see that Dennis Kucinich is amongst those. I think this man is destined to be the first president-elect, or certainly the vice-president, once the present administration is removed. He impresses me very, very much. Apparently, on Monday, January the 29th, USPJ is sponsoring the Grassroots Lobby Day, in which hundreds will press the case for withdrawal from Iraq directly with their congressional representatives and senators. And apparently, the whole weekend's activities will include a Saturday morning interfaith peace service and organising workshops on Sunday. So there we are. People are getting organised, and what they're doing is coming into the news, it's being noticed, so let's hope it continues and it brings the result that they're working for. I find almost without fail that every week there's at least one thing comes up to do with the Iraq war. All I've got here really is an observation, according to some reckoning that was made, is that the cost of the Iraq war is skyrocketing. And it actually costs $8 billion per month. And I don't know who brought this little headline out, but they said $8 billion of your money, not theirs. The rich don't pay taxes, you do. There we are. So that's one hell of a lot of money. Now, my second to last item of news is related to what is called the voice of the White House. I have a feeling I had something of that nature last week, but nevertheless. What it is, it comes from tbrnews.org. This was January the 19th. And it was suggesting that if you sent letters to Albert Gonzalez, you could actually present your case for claiming money because of the role you're playing in the Iraq war. At least this is how I read it. A person is mentioned here who is a member of the US military stationed in Iraq, although presently in Kuwait when this was written, and he was saying that they have in their possession and under their custody and control the sum of US $25 million US dollars, of course, which once belonged to the late Saddam Hussein. And he was writing to say that these cash funds had been moved out of Iraq by specific order of the Secretary of Defense and are presently kept in a safe security company headquartered for those reasons in Kuwait. And that the company is wholly owned by the relative of a United States cabinet member. It says that if you want to read more details about that, you can go to the UK link, that is HTTP whatever, 2/ and it's news.bbc.co.uk. If you look on that site, you can pick up more info. But what he said in his letter was basically, since they are working for the American government, they cannot keep the funds, but they want to transfer and move the funds so that they can keep it safe, or in a safe account, or an offshore account, to make sure that it doesn't go astray. And this letter was actually offering someone a percentage for doing that, which seems odd, doesn't it? Sort of suggesting they keep that for their own expenses. So the letter was asking that if you're interested to reply, and gave a private mail address, which is not on this email, of course, and then saying that upon your response, I shall then provide you with more details that will help you understand the transaction. Now, having read it through, I come to the conclusion that what we're supposed to see here is someone who is obviously aware of the funds and has some authority to move them around, and is offering someone else a cut to probably hide them away. I don't quite get the full story here, but that's how I believe I'm meant to understand it. Anyway, apparently this was signed by a US Army sergeant, and the person commenting in the article said it is fairly easy to understand, and I assure you, it's completely typical of the gang of thieves, con men, and moral lepers that I have to deal with on a daily basis. What is going to be done about it? Nothing. And that is why they have highlighted this particular thing. Seems odd, doesn't it? I did hear in the early days of the Iraq War that they did actually remove valuables, monies from the banks, and artifacts from the museum, so they did rather raid the place, I feel. Sorry that that wasn't totally clear there. Maybe a little bit more will come out about that one. The final item here is headed the 9/11 players, and again, there's always something about 9/11. And they said that it's time to acknowledge the master planners for their skill and cleverness, however flawed and diabolical. Apparently this was exclusive to Rens.com, article by Douglas Herman going back to the 20th of this month. And he said, you have to admire such chutzpah, which he said is Yiddish word for audacity. And he said, you have to admire grudgingly such cold-blooded, calculated cruelty, such amazing vision, however sadistic and criminal. And he goes on to talk about various aspects to do with 9/11. I don't propose to read it all out because in total there were 4 pages about this. So he's talking, for example, about the targets chosen. And he said, the WTC complex was an enormous architectural white elephant filled with asbestos and with far too few tenants. But because the WC had been built much too big and much too well, the cost of deconstruction, an estimated $15 billion, far outweighed whatever profit an owner might gain from years of ownership. And he said that suppose a buyer stepped forward and purchased the property with the foresight to realise the tower's targets, and suppose that buyer possessed insider information about an attack and insured them against such a fate. And suppose that buyer collected when those white elephants crashed to the ground within months. In fact, that is exactly what did happen, to the extent of $3.5 billion. And he goes on to talk about how the whole thing, in any event, was rather suspicious, in as much as a haphazard fire that raged out through several key floors long after the Twin Towers fell was obviously suspicious. And he mentioned that several of the floors housed security and exchange records pertaining to multi-billion dollars investigation. And the Los Angeles Times reported on September 17, 2001, that an estimated 3,000 to 4,000 cases were destroyed. And they included SEC's major inquiry into the manner in which investment banks divided up hot shares of initial public offerings, IPOs, during the high-tech boom. And he said, so by destroying the building, the fire and the subsequent collapse destroyed the records forever, and meant a huge net savings for CEOs and corporations being investigated. And he said, add several hundred million, perhaps billions, to our crime-free so far. And then he said, suddenly you realise why 9/11 occurred. And he goes on to find various reasons which make it obvious why 9/11 took place. It seemed to cover lots of facets of things that the corrupt cabal, the dark cabal, wanted to hide. Now, I'll move on now to my UFO and ET section. I'm referring back to one of my old magazines that I often bring up because it's a good source of information. That is the Flying Saucer Review. This copy goes back to September, October 1969, and as I've often noted, you tend to read in these old magazines reports that have sort of long been lost and rarely see the light of day again. Now, there was a section in this particular magazine that was speaking of healing from UFOs. Now, surprisingly enough, there are seven different cases quoted. So what I'll do is I'll read the first four this week, and then I'll read the next three the following week, so as to give ample time for the messages that I have put aside for the back part of the meeting. Now, the first one, which funnily enough I did read about a long time ago, goes back to 1948 in Germany, and it was related to a man called Hans Klotzbach. And on May the 25th, he was aboard a coal train which was headed towards Luxembourg, and he was hoping to enter that country illegally, that is, without a passport. And during the night, just before the train was scheduled to reach the frontier control station of Vasavilik, Klotzbach leapt from his coal wagon onto the embankment beside the track and sustained terrible injuries to both legs. And quite unable to walk and losing much blood, he fainted. He alleges that when he recovered consciousness, he found himself inside a flying saucer, in a cabin, bathed in an indescribable sort of opal bluish light. And a voice addressed him, as he heard it in German, and gave a great deal of information about some of the more cataclysmic events that impend for this planet in the near future. He said, this voice said that they had chanced upon his body as he lay dying beside the railway line and felt compassion for him. And he said he listened to their voice and then dozed off again. 4 days later, Hans Klotzbach came to and found himself lying on a mossy bank in a small wood just 6 kilometres inside Luxembourg and about 10 kilometres from where he had made his jump. And his trousers were thickly encrusted with dried blood, and his shoes were full of dried blood, but his injured legs had been totally healed. That's an amazing story, I think, and that was in the very, very early days of what I would call the saucer flap that started after the end of World War II, as I recall, in about 1947. That was a very interesting story. Second one I have goes back to 1951. Person called Fred Reagan of the USA, and this account came into the hands of someone who was an editor of the Flying Saucer Review way back in the mid-50s, and he didn't publish it at the time because he felt then it was too preposterous and too fantastic to be true. Anyway, it's now surfaced, as it was sort of 11, 12 years after that date, and the story reads as follows. He said, "All that concerns us now is that this man is reported to have been flying a Piper Cub light aircraft in the United States in July 1951, when his machine was struck by a pulsating, lozenge-shaped UFO. Now, the wrecked aircraft and he, with no parachute, were falling when he began to feel that he was being sucked upwards by some, as he described it, sticky, clinging force, and he was drawn into the UFO. And inside that mysterious object, he found himself in the presence of small, glistening beings, about 3 foot tall. He said it looked like huge stalks of metallic asparagus." That's a rather funny description, isn't it? "He claimed that these beings somehow spoke to him, of course in English, apologised for the accident, and subsequently deposited him, unconscious, but without even a bruise, in a farmer's meadow beside the wreckage of his aircraft that had fallen several thousand feet, the engine embedding itself 6 feet into the soil. Before depositing him, however, the beings gave him a medical examination, and finding that he had what we call cancer, removed it from his system as a slight reparation for the loss that we have caused you." That was their words to him, of course. And the writer then of the article went on to say that in view of what they had learned over the preceding 17 years, they said, although that seemed at the time a weird tale, it was worth most careful and most objective scrutiny. He completed the report by mentioning a press report which came somewhat after the incident, which was dated from Atlanta, Georgia, May 16, 52, and they said, "Fred Reagan, who made headlines last year when he had been a visitor aboard a flying saucer, died today in the state asylum for the insane. Cause of death was determined to be degeneration of the brain tissue due to extreme atomic radiation." And it said the authorities are unable to offer an explanation. Now, it's interesting that he actually died of radiation, because it is apparently a fact that some of the flying saucers do use a means of propulsion that does give out very powerful radiation. And I think that's why at times they, when they have landed, they have warned people to keep away and not touch the craft. Anyway, I think that's very interesting, and I feel in my mind it's definitely true. Now, the third case I've got is a person called Buck Nelson, 1954, also of the USA, and he was a dweller in one of the USA's more rural areas, and he claimed that it was 4 o'clock on the afternoon of July 30th, 1954. He was sitting listening to his radio when a high-pitched noise and what appeared to be a foreign speech jammed the program. While outside his house, his pony and his dog were behaving excitedly and wildly. Stepping out, he beheld a disc, at least 50 or so feet in diameter, suspended at a height of 100 to 200 feet above the house. He ran in and got his camera, by which time there were 3 discs in the sky, and as his published photo allegedly shows, he managed to secure 1 picture showing 2 of them. His other photos remain mysteriously blank, despite the fact that each time there were UFOs in the viewfinder. Buck Nelson claimed that he subsequently met the occupants. He said they were normal-sized, big-boned, muscular men, and when they landed a number of times on his secluded property, they entered his house and even took him for a flight. What is, however, of more immediate interest for us in this story, so the writer quotes in this magazine, is his account of his first sighting of the disc. What he said was, "The most extraordinary and frightening experience during this visit, however, came when I tried to signal with my flashlight to the disc that had come nearest to me. A bright beam of light, much hotter and brighter than the sun, was thrown onto me, jolting me with a current that threw me to the ground. because I suffered from lumbago and neuritis, I was afraid to move and get up and of getting another jolt. I just watched the discs until they disappeared. When I did get up, however, I was amazed to find the pains had gone, and they haven't bothered me since. So there we are. There's another person who was healed by that very hot ray of light that jolted him. I believe that also. I think in light of what's happened over many, many years now, we can't put these type of events past the abilities of UFO occupants. Now, the final one I'm going to read this week was about a dying cancer patient in Brazil. This was the year 1957. And apparently on May the 17th, 1958, J.O. Martins, who was himself a distinguished UFO investigator, received a letter from Rio de Janeiro. And it was purported to be from a certain woman named Anasia Maria. Apparently that's a pseudonym. The lady's real name was held at her request. She said that she had recently been working as a maidservant in the household of a wealthy Brazilian family living in Petropolis, in the mountains to the west of Rio de Janeiro, and that they had a daughter who was dying of cancer of the stomach and had been given up by doctors as a hopeless case. On the night of October the 25th, 1957, when the agony of the patient, Miss Lays, seemed to have reached its culmination and morphine injections were no longer helping her, Anasia Maria claims that a vivid light appeared outside the window of the patient's room in which seven members of the family and the maidservant were present. The beam of light next moved nearer and came in and lit up the whole room. And rushing through the window, the son of the family saw a small saucer from an open hatch of which the small beings descended. They entered the house. They were approximately 3'6" in height, with long yellowish red hair down to their shoulders and bright green slanting eyes, which were described as Chinese. In silent astonishment, the witnesses watched as the two small visitors approached the sick bed and laid out their instruments upon it. Then one of them placed a hand on the forehead of Senor X, the father of the dying girl, and Senor X forthwith began to communicate to him telepathically all details about the girl and her illness. The small beings then illuminated the girl's abdomen with a bluish-white light, which lit up the whole of her inside, so that the family could see the cancer in her stomach. The operation for removal of cancer lasted about half an hour, and before taking their leave, the small beings informed Senor X telepathically that the girl would need medicine for a while, and gave him a hollow ball of the appearance of steel containing 30 small white pellets, of which she was to take one daily. Miss Lays was cured, as her own doctor was able to verify, in December 1957, but no publicity was given to the case in accordance with the telepathic promise given to the small beings by the girl's father. There's some interesting cases there. I can't think I've heard of one in more recent times, so they're quite unusual, to say the least. The last item that I've got in UFOs here is some sort of summary, really, of what has been said in the channeling by Sheldon Neidel about the Galactic Federation's setup related to our planet. And it's mainly talking about their rings of UFOs and giving information about the fleet. So I'll pick out a few things because I think they're interesting. And in fact, I did something very similar myself, which article is actually still on my website. I did a complete compilation of all the messages for 2002. And I think I managed to condense it into about 4.5 pages, which was quite something. Anyway, this one talks about the first or inner ring of UFOs and saying that there are several spokes that consist of a number of special liaison and defence fleets. And their purpose is first to supervise and then to take effective countermeasures whenever necessary. and that their purpose is to refuse the secret government continued use of any weaponry that may pose a threat to our earthly allies. And we have set up interplanetary stations to close any interdimensional stargates and to carefully monitor any artificially created distortions in time's natural waves. Here, bear in mind that physicality is actually an illusion created by its inhabitants' collective core belief and the dictates of the divine plan. In this, natural patterns occur in the way time and light coalesce to form space, the stuff that produces reality. They talk of the secret government having technologies capable of altering our physical, mental and emotional bodies, and that their vile purpose is to bring about the eventual control of our minds. The Galactic Federation say they will not tolerate such attempts, and accordingly they have established a full team of scientists and corresponding liaisons who are on the lookout for these programs and then limiting their effectiveness. The article goes on to talk about the second ring of fleet components, which is headquartered on Mars, and they contain support groups that consist mainly of sentient beings who are not human in form, and that many of them will be introduced to us soon after the beginning of first contact, and others will wait until we are restored to full consciousness. They talk of other tasks that the second ring of the fleet has, which involves weaponry and technology that has in the course of the past decades been given to the secret government. Reference there, of course, to the agreement they have with the Greys. They say most of it was supplied by the off-world star nations, star leagues and star empires whose ships are to be found here. On Mars, they say there is a network of underground and surface bases which act as control and command segments of the exceedingly diverse fleet. Apparently, the Galactic Federation personnel are also busy preparing Mother Mars for our arrival en masse after our journey to full consciousness is completed. I had to have a sip of water there. My throat is getting a little bit woolly then. Right. They say that between the second and third rings are a number of special planet size command ships from their science and exploration fleets, and they will serve as the main command ships for the first contact mission. Then they have an outermost ring, which they say is by far the largest, and it contains millions of immensely varied ships, ranging from motherships the size of large ocean liners to those nearly the size of Neptune or Uranus. And these motherships are simply our final backup, serving as components that will enter the second ring only when necessary. And they say that the fleet is divided into two components as well. The first and the smaller has a very long duty cycle that contains the main command personnel as well as many medical and planetary teams. The second group, which is deliberately more temporary, consists of members of the fleet of the Galactic Federation of Light that dearly wish to be part of the most significant event in recent galactic history. That, I think, is all I want to read out of that. If you wanted to see this particular report I'm reading from, well, it seems to contain information that's somewhat like my one. You can find this on a website called godlikeproductions.com. I don't know if anything else comes off that site of that nature. I'm passing on now to the final bit of the programme, and I'm very pleased that I've got more time to spend on what are basically channeled messages, and the one that's really, I suppose, red hot off the press, as you might say, is one from Cara McKinnon. I'm just flipping over my papers here to see if I can find it, which is talking about events that are due to happen tomorrow. Now, from time to time, we do see projections that are very strong and powerful and very much to the point, and this one is no exception. I hope that the contents of it are basically true, because what it's saying is that in a matter of moments and in these last remaining days of January, you will see the collapse of the old world political game, and all players around the world who are also very involved come to their end. And this will come as a surprise to them all, for they are so consumed with their false powers they have used to rule. They never have once thought that you, the American people, would or could stop them. Now, this apparently is preceded by a plan to attack Iran and Syria. And the message reads that Saint Germain, who is the provider of the message, has sat in and listened to the agendas of their secret meetings, and the fear move, that is to attack Iran and Syria, is planned by tomorrow, which of course, and before the 27th of January, which is tomorrow, and this is to put the whole world into fear and to destroy and capture all the resources of oil in the rest of the Middle East. And it reads that all of their moves have been for this intent only. It is all lies. The old world Illuminatis across the world are joined with this move to take over completely the whole world and secure their monies and resources at the same time. And orders have been given by Mr. Bush to do just this. Make it appear as if he is protecting Americans from being bombed by nuclear bombs from Iran and Syria, which they plan to make and then use against America. So, we have a short time in which to see if the attack on Iran and Syria takes place. Presumably, if that doesn't happen, it may call into doubt the second part that I've just read out. But I hope the second part is correct. I'll read you one or two other little bits from the message. It reads that the power has shifted and the end is here. All the long efforts of you with us will bring the United States of America together as the new world begins to serve truth, liberty, and justice for all. They are outnumbered, and their war machines will turn upon themselves. Do not allow any fears at all, or ever again, to be within your consciousness. Only the power of divine love, divine justice, and the highest calling to serve the original foundation which was created by your American forefathers will remain. This is the time and the plan for all humanity. It's interesting, actually, because on the day that Kara Kincannon brought that one out, which was addressed to the American nation, I was about to sit down and start taking my message from St. Germain for Wednesday, and there was certainly no reference to it. But I'm not surprised by that, because when you read messages from the same person through different sources, they don't necessarily confirm each other, although having said that, you probably wouldn't expect them to contradict each other. Now, if you want to read the full message, let me see, I'm looking for the website address, which should be on the end of this somewhere. No, it's not. You'll have to key in Kara Kincannon's name into your internet to find her site. I'm sorry I haven't got that one written down. I've done an extract from the email, but that bit of information didn't appear with it. So, I'll move on to my next one. This is one short message, but a very nice one, from a source that I do respect, and that is the telepathic communication by Spirit Eagle, which came through on the 11th of January. Haven't got the website for Spirit Eagle, so I'm not sure if he has one. I think he sends his messages through Karen Carbo's Just Channelings. Anyway, it came out on Thursday, January 11th, and it reads as follows. Touch the hearts of all with your love and compassion. Sometimes, we know, it is difficult to watch what seems to be the deterioration of events on your planet. Do remind yourselves that this is only temporary. Send your love, send your light to all on the earth. Those who would destroy, and those who follow their orders, and those who are in fear, of losing their material fortunes are shortly to experience their fears. Your news that it is really the same old lies will shortly reveal more truth, as the light does penetrate all darkness. You'll see the evidence of weather manipulation in the recent storms and warming trends all over the planet. You will know that we of the Galactic Federation of Light will not tolerate satellites in space armed with destructive weapons under the cloak of spy or communication devices. You are all sovereign beings. You are no longer the clueless slaves of the controllers. The game that has been powered and played upon your planet is over. It is time to be in your own power. We on the Emerald Light work with those who need emotional healing, which of course can be instrumental in healing the body. You are going through vast changes as the energies flow onto Earth in ever-increasing intensities. All kingdoms upon your planet are experiencing this together. Before you sleep, or whenever it is convenient to you, ask for our help in healing and we will either come to you or bring you onto our ship. And the message concludes by saying, I am Thessaloni and will look forward to our visit. And he says, good night, expecting healing all over the Earth, Mother. So there we are. So if you call upon Thessaloni of the Emerald Light, if you need healing, you may get some response. Moving on now to an older article here. I've got quite a few of those sort of stacked up in reserve. And of course, the truth never ages. Certainly, spiritual information doesn't, by and large. This was one that was headed Walking in Love. And this was dated the 3rd of November last year. And it says, and I'm doing extracts here from what was a 6-page message, it is time to release yourself from the energy of the Matrix, the over-mastermind, and know yourselves as free to choose whatever it is you wish to do, to be, to have, to receive in any fashion whatsoever. There are no limits. Oh, aren't there? You might exclaim in response. I can see a whole number of them. Yet, they are there because you have created them to be there. Can you not also work with us to uncreate them and to move yourself into a different space and come to know yourself as powerful creators in the process? Of course you can. The first step is to decide to do it differently, using the energy of love itself as your guiding force and the means for manifesting that which you would wish to co-create with us now. Then sit yourself down, open yourself up to spirit, to your higher self presence, and speak or write of what is in your heart. What is it that you would co-create with us now? It is not the energy of the mind that we seek, but that of the heart, the realm of feeling. So take the time to feel what it is that has you passionate, what it is that has you in your truth. It goes on to say, ask for help and spirit and from those around you to assist you in doing your journey. It is there for you, perhaps not always as you might expect it to be, but there nonetheless. Remember the drowning man who continued to call to the Creator for assistance, yet spurned the floating tree and all manner of other forms of assistance that were given to him because he was waiting for a boat to come to rescue him. It reads on that the journey of the Earth plane at this time is one of releasing fear and moving into a place of knowing your strong connection to the divine within you and around you. In that light, we have been given much greater freedom to be of service to you than ever before in this time of the great shift in consciousness. It is already here and is asking you to find your path to shifting into the energy of love, of joyousness, in all that you do each day. Whatever does not serve you is being released now, and so the changes will continue to increase, allowing you the opportunity to move steadily into a world that is filled with energy, of sharing, connectedness, and love in all its forms. Final bit I'll read out says, and as you offer up a prayer to these ones and into the Creator Light, know that all is being fulfilled as the request is made where it possibly can. Where it cannot, the energy of love will guide you to a different path that is more in alignment with the whole of your journey. As you provide the space to listen in stillness for the thoughts and inspirations that will come in response to your prayer request, know that while it is you who must walk the journey of love, we can be present with you, walking alongside you, guiding your steps when you falter, and showing you the way to ever greater levels of joyousness. That's all I'll read out of that particular message. It finishes up reading that it is a collective message from a number of beings, including Archangel Michael, and it also says multitudes of others who come to share your journey that we might create in love together. I made a note at the time, which maybe suggests, what am I looking at here, that it comes from, I think, a group meditation, and I can't give you any more information. I have a feeling, looking at another part of the message, that it comes from a being called Tikali. I call her Tikali, or Tikali, or Tikili. It's spelled T-I-K-E-L-E. So I guess if you put that one in your search on the internet, you would find her website. I recognise the name as being one of very good messages, so I could recommend that one. Now I've got my final one here, which is from Jeannie, who sent out a message which came to me on the 21st of this month, and it's Archangel Raphael's overview on ascension, and it was channeled by Jenny Waywick, who is the author of Ascension, The Doorway Home, which is published by World Light Publishing. And she says, this is information in this message about the Ascension that she channeled for someone on the CompuServe BB. So she relates it here and says, take only from it what rings true to you. So I'm not going to read it all now because there's 5 pages, but I've marked up 1 or 2 bits that I thought would appeal to you. And Archangel Raphael said, while ascending is individual for light workers before the final ascension, it will be a massive event in the future for everyone on earth who wishes to take part in it and move on to their next level of spiritual development. Ascending is optional and a choice to be made by each person. The ascension has been predicted by many civilizations throughout history and is known by other names. It has also been called the Second Coming and the Golden Age. What is happening at this time is that people on earth are getting ready for a graduation of sorts. Everyone who wishes to go beyond the third dimension and their current spiritual level has the opportunity to advance beyond them with a lot of help now and in the years to come. The 5D Earth is the next step in spiritual advancement for some people on the earth. Others will choose to ascend to a non-physical dimension. There are choices to be made by people when they ascend. There are millions of light workers on earth right now, and most of them have not awakened yet, and they have little or no idea of who they are and why they are here right now. When the first of the light workers ascend, they will be writing books and eventually using every form of media to get out information to help awaken these light workers and teach people in general about the ascension. A being of light is the person who has developed beyond the limitations of the third, fourth dimension and is operating within conscious connection to their higher self. They also have God consciousness, meaning they have an understanding of oneness with all, that is, and all of creation on an intimate level. So what each light worker experiences in their own personal ascension will be unique and individual depending on the dimension they are from and the place they are ascending home to. Finally, when a light worker ascends, they consciously connect and start to merge back with the portion of their higher dimensional self from which they incarnated here from. In some cases, their higher dimensional self may be very vast and has many different aspects of itself. During the ascension process, this merging back with your higher dimensional self starts to take place right from the beginning. There's a few more bits in there, so I may include those next week, but I extracted, I think, most interesting bits in general terms. So that's it for this week. I have to thank you all for being with me. I hope you enjoyed what I selected. I will include the last three healing UFO reports next week in my UFO section. So, I'll say God bless you, and once again, thank you for being with me.